This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive. This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Когато съм във Варна, България, аз слушам WBAI радио на интернета на WBAI.org.
All right, thank you for that station ID done for us in Belgian. In Bulgarian. Sorry, I was just distracted. This is listener-supported commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Out FM. Good evening and welcome to Out FM, WBAI's progressive lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender news, culture, and activist hour at our new time from 7 to 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. For those of you looking for Tahrir, it will be aired at 9 p.m. this evening. I'm today's host, Mauro Becker, and co-hosting with me today is John Riley. World AIDS Day is commemorated every year on December 1st. Since today is the eve of World AIDS Day, we decided to dedicate this show and part of the next show to that issue.
Over the past year, an estimated 18,000 Americans and 1.8 million people with AIDS have died. Thousands are on drug treatment waiting lists in the United States, and about 10 million are on waiting lists internationally. We'll be talking with Jose Marcos from ACT UP Philadelphia about the issue. On the citywide level, every year Mayor Bloomberg dedicates his administration to fight AIDS during World AIDS Day Bagel Breakfast. And in January, the mayor seems to proceed to cut funding for housing for homeless people with HIV and AIDS. We'll talk with Charles King, president and CEO of Housing Works, about this year's breakfast and prospects for 2010.
And finally, we'll be hearing clips from HealthGap's Global Justice Award ceremony, during which Democracy Now! Co-host Amy Goodman presents the award to ACT UP member John Riley and former ACT UP member Bob Lederer. Throughout the show, we'll be hearing music from musicians who have died from AIDS, and we'll start with that right now. The entertainment world, as well as every other industry, has been devastated by AIDS. Today, as we commemorate World AIDS Day, once again we offer an extraordinary cross-section of performers whose voices have been silenced by AIDS and a shameless government, which initially ignored the illness, but continues to underfund treatment, prevention, and care. In the Gay Music Guide, Will Grega called Tom Briggs the boy from Ipanema, for Tom was a master of the smooth, sensual, seductive music from Brazil known as the bossa nova. He was a singer on the verge of the big time, and without ever hitting stardom, he died from AIDS in 1996 at the age of 42. Here with Sue Mascaleras is the late Tom Briggs.
To when I first began to sing,
making love and song and living for the day.
Back in time to when we first tried on our wings,
laughing our lives away. Take me back to when I did not feel the clock pounding like a maddening samba through my brain.
To a time before our innocence was lost,
when no one dreamed that making love. La 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 la.
La 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 la.
dancer, dancing raptures from my soul.
With my dearest friends from yesterday,
how these faces never seem to become old, laughing the years away.
But my heart beats in the tempo of the clock, pounding like a manic samba through my veins.
Sing above it, let the frenzy never stop,
so no one hears the bittersweetness of this retreat.
La 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 la.
Tom Breggs from the CD Moonlight.
In the 2008 presidential campaign, all the Democratic candidates agreed to the demand by AIDS activists that the U.S. contribute $50 billion over 5 years to fight AIDS. Despite that promise, the Obama administration only called for a slight increase in the 2011 budget for AIDS. The group of eight rich industrial countries similarly promised universal access globally to AIDS drugs by 2010. But now only about 30% of those in desperate need of the drugs have access to them, with about 10 million people with HIV/AIDS on virtual waiting lists there.
In the U.S., the situation with AIDS funding is also problematic. Thousands are on waiting lists for AIDS drug programs as a result of price gouging brand-name pharmaceutical companies. More than 18,000 people die every year from AIDS in the U.S. Joining us to talk about the current state of financing for national and global AIDS is ACT UP Philadelphia member Jose Marcos. ACT UP Philadelphia this October won a Global Health Justice Award from HealthGap. Congratulations and welcome to Out FM, Jose.
Thank you.
Jose, let's start with the U.S. How many people in the U.S. are on waiting lists for access to AIDS drugs, and who are these people?
There are approximately 4,000 people on AIDS drug assistance programs. The majority of the folks are people of color that are living with HIV and AIDS.
And ADAP, the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, that funds people that are basically working people with AIDS that meet certain income eligibility levels. Isn't that right?
Yes, the program, because the medications are so outrageously priced that most folks, working or not, depend on this program to have their AIDS meds paid for. So depending on state to state, the income levels vary. In Pennsylvania, I believe it's $35,000 income. But as I said, that varies from state to state. Some states it's only $10,000. Total income for the year that would make you eligible. So it varies on the state.
Well, globally, the situation is quite bleak. Last year, 1.8 million people died because of lack of treatment, yet the United States and Western countries haven't fulfilled their promise to provide universal access by this year. And a similar number are expected to die this coming year. What's their excuse? What's the excuse of the G8 countries for not meeting their promise?
Well, everyone's blaming a global recession when we know that these, you know, what's really ridiculous is these drugs can be manufactured for $50 a year generically. And it's really price gouging no matter how you look at it. The rich companies, and when you consider that globally and domestically, most of the people that are living with HIV and AIDS are poor people of color. And as I said, these medicines can be made extremely inexpensively if the rich countries actually wanted to treat people that are living with HIV and AIDS. It's a global pandemic, and it's absolutely ridiculous that people are dying for lack of treatment. And no one who cares about poor black people in Africa or let alone poor black people in the United States that are living with HIV and AIDS. So usually the excuse they use is a recession. But as I said, that's an excuse.
Jose, tomorrow you have a demonstration in Washington, D.C. Would you tell us about that, and would you tell us what your demands are?
Our demands are very simple, is that President Obama keep the promise that he made to the sick and the dying to reach universal access by 2010. It's the end of the year, and he has not done it as of yet. So as a person of color, hopefully speaking for other people of color, we're very disappointed in President Obama's decision not to fund this program. This is a president that's the first person of color in the history of this country that made promises to other people of color that he would fund this program, and as of not, he hasn't done it, and we are sorely disappointed with that.
What do you say to listeners who may be considering becoming active in the next year around AIDS issues to encourage them?
I would actually say, working on these issues, you actually get to see every sort of ism in this world, from sexism to racism, poverty. The tentacles reach a very long way, but every social and economic problem that you see, a lot of it can be linked directly back to HIV and AIDS. So if someone is passionate about homeless, there's so many homeless people with AIDS. If you're passionate about treatment, and activism right now is really, really desperately needed to fight the injustices that are happening to people with HIV and AIDS. I'm from the first generation of AIDS in this country, where I literally watched my community die, and it's a horrible, painful, debilitating illness that I think most people that aren't from that generation even realize or think about.
So is there anything else you'd like to say about tomorrow's demonstration?
We really hope that after 3 years of trying to get President Obama to fund these programs, that we will finally get the attention of his administration. We will actually be holding a traditional African-American funeral, which is quite different than our normal loud, boisterous demonstration. This will be quiet, solemn, and powerful, remembering those that have died from broken promises and those that are going to die with broken promises. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, come to the White House at 1 o'clock. Act up. We'll be there.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jose Marcos from ACT UP Philadelphia. Good luck with
tomorrow's demo. Thank you for having me.
He was the first country and western singer to come out of the closet. He was also a good friend of mine. He was an Oklahoma cowboy. He died of AIDS in 1996 at the young age of 29. Here's Sid Spencer.
In that July sun, they snuck around back of me, picked me up and then counted three. I went head over heels. Last thing I heard, you got to swim, come up for air, try to get another breath. No time to hem, haw, haw about how you ain't ready yet. Whether you fall off a bridge, jump off a cliff, walk off a plank, or even if somebody puts you in, you got to swim. Me and Bill, senior prom, he said, let's walk down by the pond, a little fresh air and that silver moon. Sitting on the pier, next thing I knew, all wrapped up in a kiss or two, I went head over heels. Swear somebody said, you got to swim, come up for air, try to get another breath. No time to hem, haw, haw about how you ain't ready yet. Whether you fall off a bridge or jump off a cliff, walk off a plank, or even if somebody pushed you in, you got to swim.
Sid Spencer from the CD Out and About Again. Tomorrow at 8 a.m., Mayor Bloomberg will hold his annual World AIDS Day bagel breakfast. But according to a news release by Housing Works, the bagels plan to boycott the event. The release says the baked goods are angry that the last 3 years the mayor has hosted a bagel breakfast where he professes his commitment to combating New York City AIDS epidemic and a month later proposes a budget that would devastate services for low-income New Yorkers with AIDS, especially AIDS housing services.
The bagels are calling their boycott a smear campaign. Joining us to discuss the demonstration is Charles King, president and CEO of Housing Works, the largest provider of housing for people with AIDS in the United States. Welcome to OutFM, Charles.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here to help schmear Mayor Bloomberg.
Well, can you talk a little bit about Bloomberg's history of breakfasts on World AIDS Day and their aftermath?
Sure. I actually attended the first breakfast that he hosted, and I remember him very clearly telling the audience, mostly leaders of AIDS organizations here in New York, that he and Christine Quinn wanted to be known for having been the first leaders of New York City to actually reduce the epidemic in New York City, and that we should hold them accountable for that. Over the last several years, however, every January he has come forward with a budget that proposes serious cuts to HIV and AIDS services. In addition, this year he fought very aggressively against efforts to reduce the rent burden of low-income New Yorkers who are living with AIDS and HIV. Last year, really...
So he fought against that.
He fought against that. So
basically, New Yorkers with HIV and AIDS are going to pay more as a result.
Well, and not only that, but the AIDS epidemic has clearly not declined by any measure whatsoever here in New York City under the Bloomberg administration. Last year, struck by his hypocrisy, we called on leaders of AIDS organizations to boycott the breakfast and to help stress the importance of the boycott. We set up a picket line, and 8 of us were arrested for attaching ourselves to the gate at Gracie Mansion. Leaders of AIDS organizations basically stepped over us as they walked in to attend this fine reception where miniature bagels are served. And so it was after that experience that we decided that we would try a little bit of humor. And instead of asking leaders of AIDS organizations to boycott this event, we would encourage the bagels to boycott, and hence the bagel boycott of the mayor's breakfast.
And so what are people going to see when they arrive at 8
o'clock
tomorrow?
You know what? We've had a lot of bagel chefs working very hard over the last couple of weeks to create some very, very imaginative bagels. As a matter of fact, we just heard from the coffee service union that the coffee cups are going to be joining us, as well as some sugar spoons. We have a band coming to cheer us on. So we're going to make a quite raucous statement about the hypocrisy of both the mayor and folk who protest the mayor's cuts, but then are honored to be honored by him on World AIDS Day.
And just to, I heard one of the signs was going to say, slice bagels, not AIDS housing.
Well, that, you know, we've actually come up with a lot of, we've hired some of the best creative writers in the country. I think we have some people who work for Saturday Night Live writing for us. One of the chants you'll probably hear tomorrow goes, cream cheese with chives won't save lives. People with AIDS under attack, New York bagels, act up, fight back. So we're trying to stick to the theme, make it a little bit more lighthearted than a lot of AIDS demonstrations. I think the reality of the impact on people's lives is important, but it's also important for us to be more creative in capturing the imagination of New Yorkers about a really very, very serious issue. One of the things that research has shown particularly for homeless people, is that if you want to stop the AIDS epidemic, if you want to prevent new infections, if you want to get people into care and adherent to treatment, safe, secure, stable housing is the first step to doing that. And so any mayor who would deprive people of that, whether by fighting caps on rent or fighting expansion of who gets access or trying to cut dollars going to housing and services, is really criminal.
We are talking with Charles King, the president and CEO of Housing Works, on this eve of World AIDS Day. Charles, thank you for joining us. And I'm just curious to know, what is happening nationally with housing for people with AIDS?
Well, you know, one of the things that is of hot debate is whether or not Congress is going to go for full reauthorization of the Housing Opportunities for People with AIDS Act. The president's national AIDS strategy did have some recommendations about the importance of housing, but then was very anemic in terms of the goals that it set for actually achieving meaningful expansion of housing opportunities. One of the things I think people don't know is that, first of all, homeless people are 10 times more likely to become infected with HIV than people who are housed. And 50% of all people who are living with HIV and AIDS in the United States will need housing or housing assistance at some point during their lives, often due to disability, loss of income, and quite frankly, often due to stigma and discrimination. And so there's a desperate need to dramatically expand the housing resources for people with AIDS and HIV, not just here in New York City, but throughout the country. And frankly, it's a global issue. It's not just an issue of wealthy countries. I've been doing a lot of work in Haiti where obviously after the earthquake, even more.
Sure.
Homelessness is probably the chief crisis that people with AIDS and HIV are facing.
And the campaign to end AIDS, you started that several years ago, Housing Works did. And I'm just wondering, is there any plan in the immediate future for steps to pressure Obama?
As a matter of fact, the campaign to end AIDS has probably been the single largest national network that has been critical of the national AIDS strategy. One of the things we saw was that overwhelmingly AIDS institutions, AIDS Inc., as I call it, fell over themselves to issue press releases praising the president for having developed a plan and what a wonderful plan it was and what a wonderful vision it was. But the campaign to end AIDS is comprised largely of people who are living with HIV and AIDS throughout the country. And people very quickly saw through the fine rhetoric to see that the goals that were being set under the plan weren't going to have a meaningful impact on the lives of people with AIDS and HIV. One of the things that we are working towards as part of the campaign to end AIDS in coalition with other groups is a very large human rights presence at the 2012 International AIDS Conference, which will be held in Washington, D.C., and we hope as part of that march specifically to hold the president accountable for not having lived up to his promises, whether on the global scale, as Jose referenced, or his promises to have a truly robust national AIDS strategy that would actually make new infections rare and provide universal access in the United States. And certainly the strategy doesn't come close to doing either one of those two things.
And in the last minute, Charles King, can you tell us how people can get involved in Housing Works protests tomorrow and what rain is forecast? Is there a rain plan?
Well, we're hoping our bagels, you know, bagels are pretty sturdy. And so we're counting on our bagels standing up to the rain. So bring your rain gear if need be. Show up at the Brooklyn Library. We're going to gather at 7:30 so that our bagels and friends can greet all of the dignitaries who are arriving, and we invite you to spend an hour hanging out and letting the mayor know in a very funny way that AIDS housing needs more dough. Just another example of our very creative chants.
Okay, and we've been speaking with Charles King, President and CEO of Housing Works, the largest provider of housing to people with HIV/AIDS in the country, and founder of the Campaign to End AIDS, a national grassroots HIV/AIDS network.
Thanks. It's been an honor to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Nice seeing you again.
Okay.
Peter Allen was an Australian songwriter and entertainer. He performed on Broadway and in concert halls all over the world. He was Liza Minnelli's first husband. He died of AIDS in 1992 at the age of 48. Here's Peter Allen.
Now I'm not the kind of person with a passionate persuasion for dancing or romancing. But I give in to the rhythm and my feet follow the beating of my heart. Whoa, when my baby smiles at me, I go to Rio de Janeiro, I'm a salsa fellow. When my baby smiles at me, the sun lightens up my life. Easily, you know that's just not me. But I turn into a tiger every time I get beside the one I love. Whoa, whoa,
Peter Allen from the album Taught by Experts. This is Morrow Becker. You are listening to listener-sponsored commercial-free community radio in the heart of New York City on WBAI FM 99.5 on your dial.
Joy of Resistance.
Joy of Resistance Multicultural Feminist Radio at WBAI is moving to an evening time slot. Starting December 1st, we will air on the first and third Wednesday of each month between 9 and 10 p.m. So if you work or go to school during the day, you'll now be able to hear cutting-edge feminist programming that could affect your life. And not a moment too soon, with a newly elected right-wing Congress already taking aim at women's gains. We'll also be bringing you coverage of the worldwide women's rights movements, which are unfolding in every country and culture on the planet. With music, analysis, activism, and reports from those who are on the front lines, like you. So tune in on the first and third Wednesdays at 9 p.m. and let us prove to you that it's one connected struggle and that there is joy in resistance.
No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy!
Tony Perkins was one of Hollywood's biggest stars. He was bisexual, having had affairs in the 1950s and 60s with a number of men, including Rudolph Nureyev, Rock Hudson, and Tab Hunter, prior to his marriage to Barry Berenson. With over 70 films to his credit, he will no doubt always be remembered as the maniacal Norman Bates in Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. He died of age-related complications in 1992 at the age of 60. Here's a jazzy Tony Perkins.
Under an August moon burning above, you'd be so nice, you'd be paradise to come home to and so nice by the fire, while the breeze on high sang a lullaby, you'd be all that I could desire under stars.
Anthony Perkins, from the CD On a Rainy Afternoon. Next, we bring you sound from the 2010 HealthGap Global Health Justice Award presentation. It's always a pleasure to toot the horn of good people and good friends. HealthGap is an organization which has led the fight against price gouging by brand-name pharmaceutical companies selling AIDS drugs. It is the pioneering organization fighting for generic AIDS drugs to distribution in poor countries around the world. It has demanded rich countries to help fund treatment in poor countries and for the reduction of debt owned by poor countries to rich countries. In the award ceremony, Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman presents the Global Health Justice Award to ACT UP member John Riley, my co-host, my buddy, and former ACT UP member Bob Lederer, also my buddy, for their role in co-founding HealthGap in 1999. John Riley is also a member of the Out of Hem Production Collection, as you can hear, and Bob Lederer is part of the Health Action Production Collective. The segment begins with HealthGap member Amanda Lugg introducing presenter Eric Sawyer.
Our next guest is the fabulous Eric Sawyer. Eric was the first recipient of HealthGap's Founders Award. He has also accomplished just a few other little things. Eric is the co-founder of ACT UP New York, a co-founder of Housing Works, and a co-founder of HealthGap. Like I said, just a few little things. And Eric's also currently working at UNAIDS.
If you're like me, you like to start your morning listening to the news. And there's really about only one place where you hear real news these days, and that's Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Has been led by Amy Goodman, who's been telling it like it is for the past 14 years. Amy is an award-winning progressive broadcast journalist, a syndicated columnist, an investigative reporter, and an author. Pioneering the largest public media collaboration in the U.S., Democracy Now! Is now broadcast on Pacifica, NPR, community and college radio stations, on public access, PBS, satellite television, and on the Internet. Democracy Now!'s podcasts are one of the most widely watched on the Internet. The show has been called probably one of the most significant progressive news institutions that come around in a really long time. Since the very beginning of the AIDS activist movement, Amy has been helping the social justice movement speak truth to power. in the early days of the epidemic, when a lot of organizations, news broadcasters, wouldn't publicize our actions or our messages, we'd call Amy and she'd say, sure, come on the show. I had the pleasure of being on her show a number of times. I can't thank you enough for what you do, Amy, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you. It is such an honor to be here, to be invited by HealthCap, and to honor two heroes of mine. Bob Lederer and John Riley have been involved in the fight for social justice for decades. They are fine journalists and remarkable activists. You know, when you look at peace, it is not just the absence of war. You have to accomplish peace. You have to wage peace. You have to forge peace. You have to strategize. And these guys, Bob and John, John and Bob, on the front lines, working for social justice, working to make the world a better place, whether it's to free political prisoners, to deal with AIDS, to make health care more accessible, they are remarkable role models. And when it comes to radio, when it comes to fighting for free speech, they have always been on the front lines. In the fight against the corporate takeover of WBAI and Pacifica Radio, they were right there. And that took tremendous work. Democracy Now! Was taken off the airwaves, Pacifica, and I don't know if it would have been put back on if it weren't for the work of John and Bob and other dedicated activists, and I thank you very much for that. Now, when you listen to the radio, it's a good thing to have a very clear signal. Part of the problem, though, with Bob and John is they're always creating static. Now, I'm not talking about the static that, is that veil of distortion and lies and misrepresentations and half-truths that obscure reality. I'm talking about the kind of static, that the media should give us, the dictionary definition of static: criticism, opposition, unwanted interference. They're the journalists who give us the kind of static that clears things up. We need a media that covers power, not covers for power. That's the kind of media that John and Bob give us. We need a media that is the fourth estate and not for the state. That's the kind of media that John and Bob give us. And we need the kind of media that creates static and brings us the movements, the voices of the movements, people speaking for themselves that make history. That's what John and Bob do for us. Well, they inspire us because of their long commitment to social justice activism, to the AIDS movement, but they also inspire us because of their commitment to each other. You may not know that they met at, after an ACT UP meeting over 20 years ago. Bob was recruiting young queers to get involved in the case of a man facing the death penalty. John was the one who showed interest in the case. John and Bob walked each other to the subway for several months before John invited Bob out for coffee. Bob, though tireless, almost said he was tired and wanted to go home. Thank God he didn't. He then, though, asked John how things were going with his boyfriend, and John said they had broken up. Thank God they did. Together, they have pushed us to tell the truth, and when that truth is exposed, to do something about it. Bob and John, John and Bob, it is my great pleasure to present you with the Global Health Just Founders Award.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. On behalf of both John and myself, thank you for your kind words and for giving us this award. And thank you, Jennifer, and everyone at HealthGap for this great honor. And we also congratulate ACT UP Philadelphia and the Treatment Action Campaign for their richly deserved award for the fight that they have always been leaders in for global AIDS treatment access. And we were very privileged to work with them in 2000 at the International AIDS Conference in Durban. And we want to thank all our friends and colleagues who come out tonight. So first, we want to say we were honored and moved to receive this award named after our hero, Dr. Alan Berkman. And we're especially pleased that Barbara Zeller, who's another amazing progressive doctor and AIDS activist, as well as Sarah Zeller Berkman, who herself is also an activist, a committed activist, are part of this event tonight. If it weren't for Alan, there simply would be no health gap. John and I knew him as a radical anti-imperialist, political prisoner, former political prisoner and activist, and we also knew others who continued to remain as political prisoners and were AIDS activists inside the prison, like David Gilbert, who had written powerfully about the need to take on the Holocaust of AIDS in Africa. So Alan, drawing on that same passion, as well as his lifelong work as a doctor for the poor, came back from the 1998 International AIDS Conference in Geneva on fire. He was outraged that 2 years after the release of powerful antiretroviral drugs that were dramatically improving survival rates, 95% of people with AIDS in the global south still had no access. And no one at that conference had any plan to address that. But Alan had a plan. He had a vision of a focused multi-level campaign to generate moral indignation that would force drug companies to slash their outrageous prices and would force the U.S. government to extend massive aid to purchase generic drugs. He asked John and I if we thought that ACT UP would get behind such a campaign, because that would be the key to its success. We brought in the great international AIDS activist who you just met, Eric Sawyer, and the four of us agreed to gather a broad group to see if the idea would fly.
About 20 people came to that first meeting in January 1999 of the coalition that would later become HealthGap. One thing that made it so successful was our decision to invite a diverse mix of people, including experienced ACT UPers from ACT UP Philadelphia and New York, with their fierce commitment and brilliant tactical creativity, plus health advocates, policy wonks, and progressive doctors who would fight on another level. One vital player was James Love from the Consumer Project on Technology, a group founded by Ralph Nader. Jamie is a patent lawyer and an expert on compulsory licensing, under which governments can override patents for vital public purposes. I get excited when I hear the phrase compulsory licensing. It brings out the inner socialist in me. While passing around cartons of AIDS drugs manufactured by an Indian generic company, Jamie explained that a year's supply of the combo sold for only $300. After he spoke, we knew that this information was what we needed to blow up the arguments of the politicians and drug companies that the drugs were simply too expensive for the governments to fund universal access. As HealthGap developed and came to be influenced by key activist players in the Global South, such as the Treatment Action Campaign of South Africa and others, the group's willingness to think outside of the box helped us develop other political weapons. When the social justice movement began targeting the World Trade Organization, HealthGap members from ACT UP Philly and New York stunned the Clinton administration by occupying the office of the U.S. Trade Representative on the eve of the battle for Seattle. Later, HealthGap launched a new front by working with the Jubilee movement to cancel the debts of poor countries to international finance organizations. In April 2000, I took part in a protest by 15,000 people at the IMF and World Bank meeting in Washington, D.C. And it was no ordinary protest. It was extremely militant, but nonviolent. And the next day, I was arrested with 700 people doing a nonviolent sit-in outside of the meeting site. While hundreds of us stayed in jail for 6 days, I joined the hunger strike that was protesting the abusive charges that were held against a couple of our activists, which we were demanding that they lower so that everybody got the same charges. And eventually, those charges were dropped.
HealthGap's combination of global solidarity, strategic partnerships, and smart tactics has deconstructed roadblock after roadblock. In the first year, the audacity of the affinity group Fed Up Queers, which Jen was a stalwart of, and I won't spell out the acronym, you can figure that out.
And several others in the room.
Right. Along with ACT UP members, plus a certain Rachel Maddow, disrupted Al Gore's campaign events and generated major media coverage. We won victory after victory, changing Clinton's anti-health trade policies, obtaining the first ever funds for global AIDS treatment, and forcing Big Pharma to slash the prices on AIDS drugs to poor countries.
Now we face another obstacle. The administration's claim that it can't fulfill President Obama's campaign pledge to provide $50 billion over 5 years for global AIDS because the economy is too weak. HealthGap has put forth another brilliant proposal. And that's a proposal that's been developed by a coalition of forces all over the world that's calling for a tiny worldwide Robin Hood tax on stock exchanges and a currency transaction tax that together could raise $400 billion a year. That money could be used to fight global AIDS, provide jobs at home, and help the transition to clean energy. Achieving this will take major coalition work, but it's vital if we're to end this epidemic. The history of HealthGap shows that bold thinking and focused action can be a winning combination. Let's continue the fight until we get universal access and build the coalition of movements that can make another better world possible.
Now, since those first intense 18 months of HealthGap, I've moved on to focus my activism on, as you heard Amy mention, on preserving WBAI Radio and the Pacifica Network as vital outlets for progressive education and for movements for social change, while also working on the campaigns to free U.S. political prisoners. And in that regard, I wouldn't be me if I didn't make an announcement about a crucial court hearing on November 9th in Philadelphia that could... This is important. It could determine whether brilliant black journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal will be executed for a crime he did not commit. And see Suzanne Ross in the back with flyers about that event and an important film showing in New York coming up next week. In closing, I want to applaud John and all those who have valiantly continued the struggle for global access to life-extending antiretroviral treatment. And now, just speaking for myself, I'd also like to gently encourage folks active on this issue to consider expanding your agenda to add access to another life-extending treatment, and that is multivitamin supplements. Two long-term, placebo-controlled, peer-reviewed studies in the developing world found greatly reduced illness and death in people with HIV given simple nutrient supplements. The Harvard AIDS Institute director said, quote, "This is exciting because it costs literally pennies and can ward off the time when you need to begin treatment with expensive and toxic drugs," unquote. So think about that potential to extend lives. If you want a paper detailing this, go to wbaihealthaction.org or see me afterwards. Again, thanks to everyone for this great honor. Keep up the fight. Act up. Fight back. Fight AIDS.
Act up. Fight back. Fight AIDS.
HealthGap was conceived in a small vegetarian restaurant in the West Village. Dr. Alan Berkman met with Bob and John, as you know. The three of them, with Eric Sawyer and David Hoos and just a few others, lit the spark that set fire to the global AIDS movement. And we are inspired by their spirit, their passion, and we will continue to fight in Alan's memory.
And that was Jennifer Flynn, Managing Director of HealthGap, closing the 2010 HealthGap Global Justice Award Program. Next week, we'll bring you more sound from the ceremony in which MSNBC host Rachel Maddow presents Global Justice Award to ACT UP Philadelphia, and Annie Lennox presents an award to the Treatment Action Campaign of South Africa for their pioneering work. Congratulations, John.
Thank you.
It's been said that Liberace made Elton John look butch. He was the most flamboyant character television had ever seen in the 1950s and 60s. He was one of the entertainment world's biggest stars and sold out arenas and concert halls throughout the world. He was ostentatious, outlandish, and lovable. He died from AIDS in 1987 at the age of 68. Here's Liberace. Liberace from the CD Liberace Super Hits. Without question, Freddie Mercury was one of the greatest rock stars of all time. He was the lead singer of Queen. He died from AIDS in 1991 at the age of 45. Here's Freddie Mercury. From the self-titled CD by Freddie Mercury, Freddie Mercury. You have been listening to Out FM. I'm Merle Becker. I'm in the studio with my co-host this evening and my buddy John Riley. Thanks to our guest Jose Marcos of ACT UP Philly, Charles King of Housing Works, WBAI's Amy Goodman, WBAI's Bob Lederer, and our own John Riley from Out FM. Be sure to tune in again next week for another edition of Out FM on Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. We'll be bringing you an excerpt from Rachel Maddow's speech in which she describes her participation in a headline-grabbing demonstration at Al Gore's 1999 campaign stop, in which she pulled out of her pants a banner with AIDS Drugs for Africa, Gore Greed Kills, written on that banner. Stay tuned for Tahrir at 9 p.m. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Congratulations to you and Bob both. Cazuza was the most influential songwriter of the generation of Brazilian rock bands to emerge during the 80s. His music spoke directly about love and what was really going on in Brazilian society. After 5 usually successful solo albums, the bisexual Cazuza died of AIDS on July 7th, 1990, leaving behind millions of heartbroken fans and friends. This home recording was done on the day Cazuza, Bibel Gilberto, and Dale wrote Preciso, Dizer Que Te Amo. It Must Say I Love You. The song later became a national hit from Marina Lima. Here's Cazuza and Bibel Gilberto.
Eu preciso dizer que eu te amo tanto. E até o tempo passa arrastado, só pra eu ficar do teu lado. Você me chora dores de outro amor, se abre e acaba comigo. E nessa novela não quero ser teu amigo. É que eu preciso dizer que eu te amo, te ganhar ou perder, se engano. É, perco o sono, lembrando em cada riso teu qualquer bandeira. Fechando e abrindo a geladeira a noite inteira.
From the CD Red Hot and Rio. That was Bibel Gilberto and the late Cazuza, who died of AIDS at the age of 32. Joe Dalton, the founder of the Estate Project, wrote, "For every Liberace, for every Freddie Mercury, for every Peter Allen, there are dozens more who did not reach that level of fame, but were just as accomplished and eloquent, but whose voices as well have been silenced by AIDS." As you might note, many of the singers we feature on our World AIDS Day project never made it to the age of 40. Some never even made it to the age of 30. This is Merle Becker for Out FM.
Ahlan bikum ya jamaa. Join Radio Tahrir at our new time slot, Tuesdays, live from 9 to 10 p.m., formerly broadcasting at the 7 p.m. hour. In this new time, our Tahrir team will bring you and dynamic.
Hi, this is Indra Hardat, and I'm inviting you to attend WBI's next health initiative.
This is Majid Ali, host of Science, Health, and Healing. The theme of the program is being one's own primary physician. You will learn how your foods affect you. You will learn how your environments affect you. And you will learn how toxic thoughts can sicken people.
That date is Saturday, December 11th from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. And it's at the New York Society for Ethical Culture. 2 West 64th Street. And this is a WBI fundraiser. Suggested donation is $15. The numbers to make your reservations are
973-586-4111
or 212-873-2444.
Thank you.
See you there.
If you've tuned in to hear The Largest Minority, they've moved to Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. on alternating weeks. Please listen to the program there, and remember that you can always listen online at WBAI.org.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
That's right, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. At 9 o'clock, Tahrir, Voices of the Arab and Muslim Communities. But now, it's coming up on...
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive. Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.